Colin?
Yeah, Cadence.
Do you like media and entertainment that's badass?
Duh.
Do you like media and entertainment that's bitchin'?
Yeah.
And how about a little bonkers?
Hills, yeah, throw that in there.
Then I think you might like this thing called the Baywatch Rewatch.
Oh, God. Are you trying to promote the podcast I'm actively doing with you right now?
A little bit. Is it working?
Cool intro. All right. Well,
let's get started.
Let's get into it, guys.
Cadence. I feel like maybe we should stop doing that every episode. They know who we are.
I know, but maybe they've never, maybe it's your first time listening and they just don't know.
Maybe, but in the beginning, I think we say our names too. It's okay. It's fine. We can say them forever and always.
Ever. Just drill it in. How you been? What's going on?
Not much, but I do think maybe we should talk about limiting how much we talk about Jason Momoa when we're recording these episodes.
Oh,
because
no.
When I edit them...
Hours of JMO talk. Hours of JMO talk. You know, you're right. We do get a little crazy. And listeners probably get annoyed with it. They're like, we get it. You got the throbs for JMO.
Last episode, I cut out like a 15-minute discussion that we just had in the middle impromptu of the episode. And I didn't put it in because I'm like, this is A, too off topic. And B, I think it's veering from like the cute into like the creepy.
Jason Momoa is never too off topic, but you're right. We gotta stop.
we
can only mention him limit of 50 times per episode.
I think we can probably scale it back to about 50, give or take. I mean, 50 to 75 sounds reasonable.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
deal.
Such a deal. I went camping in Russian, well, not camping. I stayed in a cabin in Russian River over the weekend.
I promise you didn't go camping.
But yeah, I went to Russian River, which is a place outside of San Francisco. And it's really nice because COVID feels like it's kind of easing up a little bit. Like summer's out, people are vaccinated, places are open again. It was really nice. Crazy, but nice.
But you were also still separated in a cabin, right?
Yeah. I know. I'm just saying because we went to the small town. Like Monday is when everybody left and we went to the small town and we like had brunch inside and people were like walking around, masks off. I went to a antique store and bought all the brooches. Three brooches, insect brooches, have no reason to have them.
Do you ever need a reason to buy a bejeweled insect brooch?
A bejeweled insect
absolutely
brooch.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so it's been pretty good. But anyway, long story short, we're back. We're recording in the studio live at you from our bedroom. So. All right. So after last week and meeting our serial killer, that Palermo was the origami gold angel killer and the sex bandit who watched people have sex. We leave that for today's episode, which is about arson and paperwork. So buckle up, guys.
Well, they're in charge of the whole West Coast.
The whole West Coast, you guys. There's not a crime that goes down without them being around. Slogan. Cadence will give the summary in a second. But there's two characters in this episode that you all have to be introduced to. Just side note, because you're not actually watching it. Anthony Hopkins looks like a knockoff Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, we'll get into that because this whole arsonist character is pulled straight from Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, it's pure Silence of the Lambs, even them looking the same.
The only thing, you can tell the only thing the director said to this guy was like, go home, watch Silence of the Lambs, come back, deliver every line exactly like Anthony Hopkins would in Silence of the Lambs. That's all I need you to do.
He not only looks like him, exactly like him. He also, yes, Cadence hit it right on the head. He's just like, fava beans, fire. Like, he just totally
literally
ripped that character.
The same. Okay, so we start this episode with Corey and Palermo. They're on a chase. It's a very high-speed chase. They are chasing a guy on rollerblades carrying a giant snake on his shoulders.
You guys, they did not think about the physics of human bodies and motion because you're on a bike. Like, you can definitely out-pedal anybody on a rollerblading. It's so funny. But yeah, anyway, They're chasing after a guy on full rollerblades with a giant boa constrictor.
Two people are chasing down a guy on rollerblades with
Corey
a giant snake on his
and
shoulders.
Palermo.
And he gets away by crawling into a sewer with his rollerblades on and a giant snake around his shoulders.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
She goes down to the pipe, like to the drain, and she looks in and she's like, oh, he got away. And I'm like, are you meaning to tell me? Because the pipe, you guys, is maybe 3 feet tall, if that, like maybe 2.5. So the diameter of this pipe is about 2 feet. And it's like, are you meaning to tell me that this guy on his rollerblades with a giant python around his shoulders is on his hands and knees clattering through a metal pipe that's like 2 feet wide?
Anything to get away from.
You can't catch him.
He's literally getting hung up and like can't move anymore because the snake blocked him. He's like clogged and his snake is hissing and constricting him. And they're like, damn it, he got away.
As soon as she like jumps down into the sand and runs to the drain, I'm like, oh, he's just going to be sitting in the opening of that pipe because he's going to be like, oh, I did not think this one through.
I know. Go to the other end of the pipe or stay on that end of the pipe and just wait. That's all you got
to
do.
So, she goes down to the pipe. He's long gone at this point. He's traveled so far into the pipe with his rollerblades and the snake.
He doesn't even know where he is.
She can't even get a visual on him. He's so far down the pipe.
I can't believe I'm reduced to chasing rolling snake men into the sewer. I mean, when the hell did I become a sideshow barker anyway?
When City Hall decided we had to check all street performer permits, the annual wacko roundup, and he's your last ghoul. So catch him, okay?
You know, I used to be a carny. You know, I was a carny for a while, so.
You were?
Yes, before I moved to San Francisco. Remember, I was full carny? Del Mar Fair, baby.
Oh, my God,
catch
please.
Me at the Del Mar Fair. Slept outside in a tent. Full carny worker.
I don't know this, or I blocked it out. Can you please tell me more about this?
I needed to earn money to come to San Francisco, and I was hustling my way through life, and between Phoenix, Arizona, and San Francisco, I went with my very good friend who, her stepdad ran a carnival at the Del Mar. He had so many little trinkets, and I just stayed for like months and ran a food truck at a carnival.
I don't remember.
Full carny status. I used to,
it was
like,
what year would that have been?
All barter system. I used to like trade burritos to get to go on the slingshot, and like someone would come and give me a henna tattoo if I gave them nachos. It was amazing.
Then how did you save up? Well, I was just thinking, if you only worked on the barter system, how did you save money?
Oh, that was just to get things outside of the money, but we did get paid.
Oh, so you're talking about just the ecosystem within the carnival.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm full carny. I love it. So you just don't get it. Unless you've been there, you just don't understand the intricate ecosystem that is the carnival.
So I don't know if you remember that, but we are actually talking about an episode of Pacific Blue.
Oh, yes. Okay. So back to it. Carnival. No, not a carnival. He's in the pipes. So he's in the pipes.
So he's made his escape. Corey feels like she's being underutilized on the team. Here's my favorite part, though, because she's originally made this chase with Palermo, and she's like, you know, frustrated because she's like, god damn, he got away, he's in the sewers crawling around with a snake, when did I become a carnival barker, this is a sideshow. And Palermo goes, we've been tasked by the city to make sure that all these sideshows on the boardwalk have their licenses and their paperwork up to date. So, like, now it's your problem. And he just rides off.
He's like, yeah, now that you're feeling that way, you also have to collect all their permits. Bye.
He totally leaves her hanging. Like, you think because he's in on the chase that, like, she's got some backup, but no.
Nope.
So he leaves her with this job, and that will be her storyline through the episode. Poor Corey, all she has got to do is chase down paperwork.
As she is chasing Boa Constrictor Skater Man.
Should we call him Boa Skates? That sounded funnier in my head.
I knew like you were going, skates? I thought it was going to be Jason Boboa, but I get it. Okay, no. Yeah. Roller. Yeah, you said
roller
it.
Skates, boa skates. That's
boa
how
skates.
It sounded. Okay.
But he's running away from her, or gliding away on his roller skates like an awesome person. And they obviously can't use a real boa constrictor, so it's clearly a plushie, like a plush snake. It's a full beanie baby, it's like as he's moving, he's holding it in this way, and it's just never been so apparent.
All right, so we get back to the Back to the station after that. I mean, my personal motto is it's not a good chase unless it ends in a sewer. So
Corey's motto.
Corey's pissed.
She is, because this is her one job. They took her off anything important after she shot that gang dealer in the leg.
Oh, you know that's true. And now freaking Palermo's like, okay, well, after you chase that guy with the snake, just check on everyone's permits, please. You're really important to the team. You're really integral. You know what I'm saying.
You're a big part of the team. But her level of frustration is only increased when she gets back to the station and discovers that some evidence is missing.
Well, her and Palermo go down and discover.
No, she comes to tell Palermo. She says, hey, I have some bad news. He's like, how bad is it? She's like, there's some evidence missing from the evidence room. He's like, okay, take me down. She takes him down and she goes, there's a half pound of meth missing from the Valdez case.
A half a pound of meth. That is an insane. I mean, I don't know much about meth, but I'm assuming that is a lot of meth.
I can't. I mean, like, I know nothing about meth, but I know that a half pound is a lot of meth. It's a lot of meth.
But the best part of it is they pick up the box where it's missing.
Yeah, not only is it missing.
There's a little baby hole in the side of the box. A little baby hole. And you're like, it's very dick in the box hole. But you see it and you're like,
it's a rat. In a box.
In the meth box. Oh, man. So Palermo and Corey now have this whole other shenanigans on their hand. But they kind of assume it's a rat, you guys.
Because you guys, they don't assume. They somehow can sense from their police skills. They look at the rat hole. They look at the chew marks and they're like, it's that freaking rat that's always running around the station. So it turns into a hijinks. Never mind that they're missing very crucial evidence. Never mind that it's a half a pound of meth. The rat ate the half a pound of meth and there's a methed out.
Meth rat out, right? Yeah, no wonder it's the meth rat that's around your office. You've gotten him hooked on meth. Also, like, what do they tell their superiors? They're just like, whoops, meth that's is missing. I'm we think saying. It's a rat. Oh, it's that it darn rat so that runs important. Around the office with its eyes bugging out and eating people's legs. That darn rat.
It feels so important. Like, a half a pound of meth from the Valdez case feels like some very important information.
Yeah, it is. And they're just like, oh, that darn rat. We think, we assume it's a rat eating all the meth.
So Palermo just adds insult to injury. Now not only is Corey in charge of verifying everyone's performer paperwork on the boardwalk, she's now in charge of finding and taking care of the meth rat. And
so meth rat duty. Oh, no. Corey, she's got to be feeling so bad. She's like, man, I come from a long line of intense Irish policemen. And I have to chase guys into a hole with fake snakes, find the meth rat, and check people's freaking permit paperwork to see if they can perform.
Her, like, dad and her grandpa, remember that episode where they were having serious conversations about, like, their cop lives?
She keeps getting
calls from them, and she just keeps hanging up, like,
I'm on a really, really exciting case. I can't talk about it right now. Really, really exciting stuff happening right now. Okay, bye, dad. Bye, grandpa.
It's a real rat race, if you know what I mean.
One day of the rat race. So the best part is, because Corey is in charge of finding the meth rat, she decides to call the two characters we mentioned earlier that are the greatest characters of all time. They are the rats and stuff, not and, rats and stuff, rats and stuff. And they are these two guys that are just portrayed as the
rats exterminators. That particular storyline gets real weird. So we're going to leave Corey in the station with her very important jobs of paperwork and rat meth.
Yeah, let's leave that rat meth rat behind, but he's coming back up, so don't you guys forget about him. But let's put meth rat on the on the back burner for now, on the back meth burner.
Yes, he comes back, as meth rats always do, because there's more meth to be found.
I know. Of course, as a rat, you're like, I hit the jackpot!
But we're going to leave the meth rat for a moment.
I don't want to leave it quite yet. I just want to ask one question. Okay. Like, if a rat really did eat half a pound of meth, how far is that rat? How big is that rat?
And how far is that rat going to get?
Yes, it'll just explode and die in the box. Like, where is that rat going to go? Like, does she need to hire somebody to find it? Like, she just look around the office for a smell after it dies from its heart exploding. Unless it takes it in its little hands and goes to the rat community and just starts dealing it, which could happen. Oh no, what if there's an Annette rat? She's down there like, give me all the meth. I gotta win Miss. I gotta win Miss Rat Physique 3 years in a row. Okay, now we can leave. Now we can leave meth rat behind.
So the real juicy storyline this episode is an arsonist. And we are introduced to this arsonist because we see a warehouse on fire. And in the midst of this fire is a guy wearing like a big fire, like a fire retardant suit. You know, he's completely decked out. He's got a mask. He's got goggles. He's got a, like a tank of fuel strapped
to his
back.
He's not like lighting matches, you guys. He's got a freaking blowtorch.
He's not like using a little matchbook.
No, he's got like a full, what are they called? Flamethrower. It's like,
yeah, a flamethrower. The homeless community is outside this warehouse and they see this arsonist burning everything and they're like, it's the phoenix.
Well, we know who the rat's been dealing to.
It's really important to remember the name the Phoenix because this is essentially what we're going to be calling the arsonist, because that's his nickname. There's one particular man who is going to relay this information to the police squad, and this man's name is Suicide.
Suicide and Phoenix.
Yeah, so Suicide witnesses Phoenix. And he comes to the firehouse. He's terrified, okay? Terrified, because this guy's been trying to blowtorch everybody who lives near and around the warehouse.
Yeah, he's not just burning down warehouses, you guys. He's trying to blowtorch people also, like human beings and rats and whatever he can get his little hands on.
He's out of control.
He's out of control, that Phoenix.
Suicide's like, I saw it. But here's the catch. It's the Phoenix, and the Phoenix is a ghost.
I watched him disappear into the flames. What's the deal? You guys like you don't believe in ghosts?
Look, Suicide, we're all proud of the work you do for the homeless community. But the fire department's initial report indicates a squatter set the fire accidentally.
Come on! I know you guys think that I'm like whacked here, that the sun has like fried my brain, but you gotta believe me. I was in the flames, okay? I saw it. I saw what I saw. I didn't even think I was gonna get out.
So Suicide says that Phoenix is a ghost?
Right. So there's this sort of like legend on the streets that the Phoenix starts warehouse fires and disappears and no one knows who he is. He's like this ghostly arsonist.
His name should be something other than the Phoenix, though, then. But whatever.
A phoenix rises from the ashes.
But Phoenixes are very visible. You're not an invisible ghost. But I get what you're saying.
I think they were going for the ash metaphor. Yeah, the ash metaphor. I think that's what they were hanging their hat on. Mm-hmm. So Suicide comes and he's having a meeting with Palermo, Chris, and TC. And he's like, listen, I saw this with my own eyes. I know. And then Palermo's like, listen, Suicide, we appreciate all the things you do for the homeless community. I don't necessarily think there's a ghost starting fires, but thanks, bud.
Wait, so Suicide thinks it's a ghost? I thought he actually saw him. But oh, he saw him, but he still thinks it's a ghost. I get it. Yeah,
right. He's a visible ghost. Yeah. So as soon as Suicide leaves the room, TC and Chris and Palermo sort of have like a little meeting. They're like, do you think this is real?
I believe him.
I don't know what to believe. One accidental fire, two maybe, but three? Ghost or no ghost, fires are burning on our turf. Someone might get hurt. Let's check it out.
So Palermo says, okay, Chris, TC, just go help out at the warehouse. It's not in your district. It's not part of our region.
Just go back to the warehouse and hang out. Go get the Wi-Fi to work at the warehouse, guys. Get over there.
So they head over to the warehouse, and there is a crime scene investigation happening, but Chris decides just to stick her little fingers in around every piece of evidence. These are two important names. I don't want to get bogged down because this plot gets a little bit messy, so I'm going to try to keep it as simple as possible. Really, the only thing you need to know is that Mr. Bilson owns all the warehouses that are ending up on fire. Matt Miller is the detective who is heading up the investigations on each of these cases of the warehouses being on fire. Okay?
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
Okay. Bilson, rich guy. Bills. Like pays the bills. Matt, arsonist Matt investigator. Miller. Got it.
So Detective Matt Miller is already investigating this. And he's like, you know what? Looks like just a homeless person set a fire by accident to me. Just absolutely accidental. And Chris is like, hey, did you notice that there's like all this fluid? There's all this.
Yeah. Can I take a minute to say
gasoline?
I'm not an arsonist expert, but like, I'm pretty sure I could tell if things were fried by a blowtorch versus like a match setting things on fire.
Right. Because like the evidence, guy who had a trash can fire and it accidentally got out of control.
If you look at this, there's like full blow, like things are disintegrated with other things. There's like full smoke, like signs of where the torch
Everything's melted together.
I'm like, I'm not an expert to say probably a match didn't do this, but I'm not a fire expert. I'm not an arson expert. Right. I want to be.
You're not Matt Miller.
I want to be.
So Chris, you know, Matt Miller's already been like, you know what, guys? This is an accident. I told you a homeless person started it. Let's just let it be. And Chris, because she's got her fingers in all the little pies around the crime scene, she pops up with this little tiny casket out of the ashes. You might be asking yourself,
is it the rat? Did he die? Did they have a rat funeral in there? He OD'd, so the rats had a funeral and they buried him in this little casket. That's what I'm thinking. That's where my head's at.
That's exactly
They open it and it's just a little rat with a little rose holding onto it, or a gold origami angel just like
laying in a bed of meth.
With all these notes from his little rat fellow people. That's where my mind went, but continue.
Yeah, that's where my mind is, and I can't stop picturing a rat funeral. You guys, I just keep anthropomorphizing rats now, and I have like drug dealing ants, I have rats, I have funeral throwing rats, I have, yeah, it's a whole thing.
They do it. Okay. They do it.
It might be, you might be thinking to yourself, like, casket, tiny casket, what the hell are you saying? It's also like that when you see it. It's like this little itty bitty, like maybe 6-inch long metal casket.
They took it from Disney's Haunted Mansion because it's got like this stupid little skull on it, like a little fake skull. It looks like you got it at like freaking, what is that?
That's the thing. It's like a Hobby Lobby. Like that's how I was writing it down in my notes. Like it's Spencer's, like a craft like Spencer, casket.
Yeah, like Spencer's Gifts or something. Like
yes, or Hot Topic or something.
Yes, Hot Topic little baby rat casket. Think of that, you guys. You get that in your head.
Because it's just so weird. It's such a weird like trinket that some old lady would buy for Halloween decorations from Michael's or something. It's so bizarre. So she picks it up and she's like, hey guys, seems like in your investigation you missed this. And she opens it and it's filled with little burnt pieces of newspaper that are like, Blaze sets warehouse afire.
It's like you took
Phoenix
like took the time to just crisp the edges so it looks like old detective paper. He's like, this'll really show them. It looks like old timey burnt paper. I did that for a party one time, a murder mystery party. Like, I know how it goes. Spill a little bit of tea on the paper, burn the edges. It looks like 100 million years old.
That's the thing, is that you'll see later he has a whole like crafting area where he puts all this together and he really truly does just that.
Just because you're an arsonist doesn't mean you can't have a little crafting corner. Just take do a little crafts.
They tell you to just like make a passion out of what you love in life, make a career out of what you love, and he's doing it.
He's building a little popsicle stick warehouse and like little fake like little small miniature models and like burning them and like oh.
And then all the little fake ducks are like bitty bitty rats.
And all the like little bitty like people outside, like the homeless people that are gonna report him as a ghost. He's like, man, I'm really doing it. Living my best life.
Oh, Phoenix, you're now inspiring me. I feel like you got a bad rap.
All right. So guys, we're gonna leave you away from, I know you're in this whole thing with us about the arson.
You're like rapidly writing notes. You're like Bilson, Matt Miller. Phoenix,
the suicide, all the rat suicides, meth, it's all crazy. So we're going to leave that just for a second. We're going to go back to Corey because we got to check up on her. We got to see what she's doing.
She's doing the real work of this episode.
Right.
She asked Chainsaw Guy, you know, have you seen this performer running around? He's like, who are you talking about? Oh, by the way, I came up with a better name. His name is Roller Snakes.
Have you seen Roller Snakes around? And Chainsaw
Better
Guy.
Better than my first name.
He does have a pretty impressive little act, you guys. He's pretty cute, but he like gets up and balances on a swivel board while juggling a chainsaw and two balls.
Two chainsaws, yeah.
Yeah, he starts out with two balls and one chainsaw, then he adds another chainsaw to the mix while he's balancing on this like hoverboard thing. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's pretty impressive.
But and Corey's feeling that. She's like, mm-hmm.
She's like, if you can handle those chainsaws so well, I wonder what else he can use those
hands for. So she's asking him, like, hey, have you seen roller snakes? And he's like, who the F is roller snakes?
No, he does not. He says, oh, I know roller snakes. I freaking love his act. And since you chased him off the boardwalk into the sewer, I've really missed it. It was pretty impressive. And she's like, oh, yeah, what did he do? And
yeah, I'm like, asking, like, what the hell did roller snakes do?
Hey, so I haven't seen a snake man around in days. I kind of miss his act, to tell you the truth.
Besides running from the cops, what kind of an act does a guy on rollerblades carrying a snake do anyway?
A really cool one.
Yeah?
Yeah, he gets the snake to unhinge its jaw. And then he swallows a grapefruit whole. And he twirls around on his skates until the snake finally just throws up the rind.
You don't see that on Letterman.
That's pretty cool.
That's so stupid. That's the most ridiculous. I don't know how you caught that. I did not.
The guy throwing chainsaws says, it's actually pretty cool. I'm like, a snake throwing up a grapefruit rind compares to you juggling two chainsaws? What are you saying? Do snakes even eat grapefruits?
And how do you peel it with your little stomach muscles and then just get the grapefruit out and vomit up the rinds? And yeah. If I saw that as a performer, I'd be like, what the hell is going on?
It's not cool. It's not an interesting act. It's cruel to the snake, making it eat grapefruits, making it so sick it vomits up the grapefruit, and then rolling around and taking it into sewers, like high-speed chases this poor snake. Beyond this absolute indulgent side note about why the fuck this guy's act has any merit whatsoever and why he even needs a vendor card for it and why he has the self-confidence to actually feel like it's worth a vendor card is beyond me. Mm-hmm. But Corey, near the end of her conversation with Chainsaw Guy goes back to his act. She catches the roller snakes and she goes after him. Again, she cannot catch him. He can outskate her. His poor little snake is whipping around on his shoulders like, what have I gotten myself into? And so he disappears into a crowd and Corey jumps off her bike, goes into the crowd. And you guys,
what Cadence is getting at is she walks into the middle of a WTC, wet t-shirt contest. So she goes into a wet t-shirt contest and you guys, she immediately notices that she's having a wet t-shirt contest. She runs away. They grab her. All the people on the ground grab her. Physically assault her, think she's a wet t-shirt contestant because she's in a cop uniform wearing a white polo. So they throw her up on stage and start throwing buckets of water at her.
Ah, looks like our last contestant is in uniform.
This is crazy. Like, what are they thinking? I guess you cannot. Maybe the memo said, don't wear a white t-shirt. We'll grab you and throw you up on stage.
Doesn't it on some level just speak to how powerless the bike cops truly are? Because if it were like, if it were a black and white or a four-wheeler, would they really grab you in full uniform and put water all over you?
Yes, I would say yes, because you know what? They are just fully, they're taken over by the power of the wet t-shirt contest. When you see a wet t-shirt contest, you glaze over, you go into a kind of like coma-esque a fog, and you mm-hmm. don't know what you do, what happens there, and you just start, wet t-shirt, yes! And so, you know, I want to say that I blame them.
On your mind, and that's wet t-shirts.
You see someone in white, you throw them up on that stage, you dump water on them. That is what a WTC is.
Roller Snakes has made his escape a long time ago. The thing that truly, I feel like, brings so much shame to Corey, besides being physically held down and had water poured on her, is that she has to go back to the precinct. They make a point of her going back to the precinct in a wet t-shirt with her nipples so hard. Mm-hmm. And so prominent. And she has to talk to all the men that she works with her breasts basically exposed. And they all have to make comments like, have you been having a good time? I see your day's been interesting.
She got water splashed on her. There is no way she can dry that off. It's impossible to change shirts. You know that.
It's true. And even though you have a locker at work, it doesn't. You are forbidden. Once you get stuck with a wet t-shirt, your punishment is like you absolutely cannot get another t-shirt out.
Oh, is it a punishment?
Don't
even try. Oh, I didn't really mm-hmm.
punishment. It is because you failed your duty as a cop. Like you lost control of a crowd, so you're stuck. Get it together. So we're going to go to TC and Chris and Palermo, because whether or not the Phoenix is an actual ghost or not is really not the point. The point is that there is an arsonist. There are fire fires being started. Regardless, warehouses are burning down. And even though they haven't been asked and it's not their jurisdiction and they're absolutely not fire investigators, they are going to get to the bottom of this because they are an elite bike squad. So here's where we get the setup, right? So they're talking about how arsonists, they all know each other. They all know each other because arsonists have
community.
They have a secret society because they love bragging about their fires to other arsonists.
Remember our friend Suicide's dead on with his ghost sightings, or Halloween's come at a strange time this year. The burnt newspaper from April 10th, 1986. I did a little legwork. The article was about the Phoenix supposedly burning to death while setting a fire. There's got to be a logical explanation. We just have to find it.
Matt Miller's lying.
Based on the combustible you found at the fire scene, I'd say you're right.
It's an alcohol-based compound used in flamethrowers.
You know, the odds of an arson expert like Matt Miller missing this stuff? They're through the roof.
Unless he wanted to.
Question is why?
The answer's there. It's your job to find it.
You got any suggestions?
I think I may know where to start. Arsonists are a strange bunch. And even though they're basically loners, they do have a secret society of sorts. They get off on sharing fire stories. Maybe we can tap into their grapevine.
She's right. I put one away several years ago.
How do you know about all this?
I just do.
I love it. I'm on an arsons chat room. I love chatting with other arsons. HH doesn't mean holding hands. It means something. How hot is it? How hot's that fire? LOL is not laugh out loud. It's lighten on lighten. Lighten on lighten. That's what I do. LOL. And they're like, oh, yeah. And I just light shit on fire. It's really nice. Post little pics. BRB is, bye. Really gonna brighten up the room. I don't know. The fire. I don't know. Oh, it's really good. Anyway, I get it. That makes total sense that arson has like a little group. Arsonists have a little group.
Yeah, the point, regardless of what their lingo may or may not be on the internet, is that they do have a community. And then Palermo offers this helpful bit of information. He is coincidentally being held at a mental facility. So I feel like since all the arsonists know each other, if you went to go talk to him, even though he got arrested like years and years and years ago, if you went to go talk to him, because they all have like a chain letter system, a phone tree, so to speak, that he would probably be able to help us because he speaks arsonist lingo.
Two things. BRB would be burning really bright. I just thought about that. Burning real bright. BRB, burning real bright. But yeah, like Cadence is saying, think of it. It's kind of reminiscent, as we said earlier in the episode, of, I don't know, one Silence of the Lamb or Hannibal Lecter. Think of it like that situation. Like Hannibal Lecter is in jail and you have to figure out who's killing and eating people. So he may know because he knows killers inside and out. Okay, so we have been through a lot so far and we're just going to take like a 5-minute breather. We just need to like take a breather, take a step back and just recap. Okay, what is going on right now?
Okay, so then we have Chris, TC, and Palermo who are concocting a plan to track down the arsonist to find out who it is, where he is, because Matt Miller cannot be trusted and Bilson also cannot be trusted. There's something hinky going on with those two and we haven't figured it out yet, but don't you worry. TC and Chris are about to go visit Dr. Anton Mortimer, who is an arsonist that Palermo arrested years previous, who will definitely have the drop on all arson-related dialogues, communications, so on and so forth.
Officer Calloway, it's so nice of you to come calling. It's been so long since I've had any visitors. Please sit down.
No, thanks.
Hot tea?
Tea?
Yeah. Don't worry. They bring me the water already boiled. This is just a warmer. It doesn't get hot enough to ignite anything. I know. I've tried.
Dr. Anton, we're here to ask you a few questions regarding
Phoenix. It's a lovely city, isn't it? Well, I'm joshing you. Teasy. You want information about infernists?
That's right. Dr. Anton.
Oh, Mortimer, please.
So TC and Chris are now in the mental facility, the mental health treatment center. They're there to see, obviously, Dr. Anton Mortimer. First he has a faux British accent. You can't quite put your finger on.
Mm-hmm. And he's got this incredible athleisure wear outfit on, which I think is so comfortable looking.
It's probably my favorite. Yeah, it's really, it looks loungy. It looks relaxing. He looks mm-hmm. like he's just living his best life.
Head to toe black sweatsuit thing. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. great. It's
luscious
great.
Hair flowing in the wind.
I know. Obviously, he's getting shampoo and conditioner and a shower every day. I mean, mm-hmm. this guy's not doing too bad for himself.
He's absolutely freaking thrilled that he has company. Let's just get that out of the, just mm-hmm. right out of the box. He's chewing up the scenery like nobody's business. He is hamming it up so hard, so hard. Mm-hmm. And then he's got this weird accent. Here's my personal theory. He's a little gay because he loves gossiping. He absolutely.
Spilling the tea.
I was just going to say, when he offers tea, he is not offering. I mean, yes, he's offering physical tea. He's all. Though 100% being like, girl, let me tell you who these arsonists are.
Uh-huh. We got an arsonist group
because
on Facebook.
He's way too excited about it. And then he's, oh my God. And then he's just like, what, girl, me? No, I stay out of the drama. Like, I'm just in here living my life. I'm just trying to be my best self. I'm meditating every day on my bed. I don't know.
I do know something.
Some information. Mm-hmm. One of my absolute favorite, just small throwaway details in the dialogue is that Dr. Mortimer does not call them arsonists. He calls them infernists.
That is a very crude label, Officer Calloway. A devoted infernist embraces fire on a much deeper level. It is the union between man and flame that we strive for, rather than just the creation of fire alone.
Oh, Jesus, Mortimer. What an idiot.
That's the proper way. That's the respectful
infernist?
Way. Within the community,
or infernoist.
We call ourselves infernist.
Infernist, oh my God.
An artist who starts infernals, I'm guessing. That's how I feel.
So when someone hears arsonist, they're just like, oh, someone who just lights fire. But an infernist is like someone who creates, manages, and decorates with fire.
Exactly.
I told you I'd be an infernist in a different life.
Oh, he also happens to have inexplicably just so many piles of books on the one desk in his room.
Because he's smart. And he's a genius. He's a vaguely British infernist genius. You know that. He's literally copying him.
All he's doing is reading about fires. That's all he's doing.
All day. How do I become the best infernist I can be?
Dr. Anton Mortimer is giving this really intense speech to Chris. And he's like, I mean, because he's a genius, he can't just be like, listen, infernists love to set fires. It feels so good. It gives them such a fire boner. Uh-huh. Like, just trust me on this. We uh-huh. love it. Instead, he's like,
were you touched by fire? I mean, really touched?
No.
It's a pity. The flames, they tease you at first. They lick at your skin until they scream in pain, until the connecting tissue that holds your epidermal layers together can take no more, until the skin just peels away from the muscle. The fire eats at your very soul, and then something wondrous happens.
What's that?
The pain stops. The fire knows it is won.
It'll never win with me.
Oh. Time will tell.
When you set a fire, the flames lick your skin.
Oh, God. This is where he gets real Hannibal.
Searing until a miracle happens. And the pain stops and you feel numb. And you have total power. It's
disgusting.
It's disgusting. It's weird.
Creepy.
It's not
awful.
Helpful in any way, shape, or form.
She's like, so what the hell am I supposed to do
in
with that
finding
information?
The arsonist.
Okay. But yeah, what do you want me to do?
And then he goes, he looks at her and he's like, but of course, you know what I'm talking about.
And she's like, and she's no, like, I don't. I have zero fucking clue what you're talking about.
So, at the end of this really weird speech where he thinks he's extolling some valuable information, he tells Chris,
the ancients thought that fire was alive. They worshipped it. It gave them warmth, therefore life. The ancients were right. It is alive. Fire is always right here with us, just waiting to be reborn. You have been in the flames, haven't you, Chris?
Like, you, more than anyone, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? And she's like,
I guess. I mean, I had a few things lick my skin last week with freaking TC licking my skin, trying to get into the hotel room at Chantel. And the guy licking
and
my
that
badge
guy licking
before,
my police
right?
badge.
She's like, I know a thing or two about licking,
so
but what the hell does that
do? I'm familiar with licking.
Like, okay, I kind of get it. Thanks.
So they leave. Okay. And it kind of briefly implies that something, yeah, is going on with Chris, that like she has a past as an arsonist, or that she
once made love
to an arsonist. Or
that would be such a dream.
That she had a fetish for an arsonist.
That'd be the best if it just goes to full backstory and Chris is like crazy arsonist.
So that's like a weird side note. But the point, that's not the best point of this. The best point of this, the end of this interaction, Chris and TC leave. And Dr. Mortimer goes and kneels by his bed.
And he pulls out.
Okay, guys. No, wait, guys. His bed is a cot, okay? His bed is a cot.
An actual cot.
You can see right through the bottom. It's a foot and a half off the ground. Metal legs, metal frame, not even a
full
peep of
army
privacy.
Cot. Full.
Nothing. You can see, you can bend down, see straight through the wall behind the bed, right? So there's nowhere to hide. Nothing is down there that people will not see. He's also in a high security mental health facility.
Oh, they do checks like every day. Come on, guys. We've been in jail. They know they do searches all the time.
Right. He kneels down at his cot, reaches under his bed, and pulls out a little craft box, you guys.
A little coffin. Little Michael's coffin. Similar to the one that Chris found. With that sneakiest, he has the sneakiest little look on his face, too. Like, look what I have that they didn't catch.
And like, Chris and TC could have just been like, hey, dude, what's that box underneath your bed? Got any secrets down there?
What's that coffin there with that face that looks exactly like the evidence I found the other day? Lying right there under your bed. Plain sight.
It was in plain sight. Okay, bud. Okay, you're not as smart as everyone thinks you are.
He's got some kind of connection with this little Michael's craft wood rat death coffin.
He can't be the Phoenix because he's in a mental health, high security mental health facility. So, like, what is his connection to the Phoenix?
Well, also, would
he
you
can't
be
sneaking out of there at night?
Would you be like in a high security mental facility for being an arsonist? Like, you're not, I guess. That could warrant that, but I feel like you could just go to regular jail.
But if you, especially if you're burning buildings down that, like, that's hurting people, then that's manslaughter, that's murder. Like, that, you should be in a prison for that. Anyhow, we're moving on for one quick second from the arsonist Phoenix Mortimer storyline to come back to Corey and.
Oh my God, I'm so ready to hear what's going on with Meth Rat and Corey and the. The grapefruit snake, grapefruit roller snakes.
All right. So we're back to Corey, and she's going to make one last effort to try to catch roller snakes because, gall darn it, she's been given a job by a Palermo, and she's going to do it.
She's a McNamara. She's going to do it.
She's a McNamara. This is her life. So she goes out on her bike, and this is genius. This is why Corey's down in her bones, just an absolute badass police officer, okay? So she sees roller snakes. He goes on the run with his rubber snake. That rubber snake is whipping around in the wind like nobody's business.
Just bouncing around, like way smaller than the original boa constrictor they use. Literally a rubber snake that they bought at a gag shop, but I digress.
So you see the chase. It's, oh my God, what's going to happen? The suspense is so big. He jumps off the end of the pier, crawls back into the sewer where he went the very first time, where he got away from her.
And then guess
and
what?
She has a look on her face like, yeah, that's exactly where I thought you were going to go, bud.
So she goes down there. She's looking in and you're like, oh, he got away again. He went right back into that sewer. Nope.
And she goes, I thought I left my fishnet down here.
And pulls him out, you guys. He got stuck in a fishnet that she had planted, and she pulls him out. And it is the best thing ever because he's not so really good. Struggling or anything. He's kind of just like limp fish and she's just pulling him out really slow.
Because he's in a fishnet.
But it's, come on, Corey. Hey, how do you think that he's going to do that two times in a row? But maybe that's his like escape spot. Maybe he knows how to get away. And she just thought. But you know what? Corey, good on you.
And she herself pulls a full-grown man with a python out of the sewer.
Yep, and he doesn't try to get away or anything. It's just, all right, handcuff him, bring him in.
She takes him into the station, and the whole time he's just like, oh, I can't believe you're doing this to me. And she's like, you know what? You're both going to be in a cell together until animal control can come here. You're going to be with your snake, and you're going to be paying the price. And he's like, I want my lawyer. I want to make a deal. And she tells him there are no deals to be made, bud, which also I don't think that's how that works.
Okay, you and your oversized night crawler can stay here together until animal control comes to pick you up.
It's a lady, my lady, and you can't take her to animal control. Call my lawyer. I want to make a deal.
No deal.
Also, do you think he has a lawyer? He's a snake street performer that makes his snake regurgitate grapefruit skins. You think he has like a lawyer on retainer? Like he's like, give me my lawyer.
He's the one that said it. So maybe he does. You don't know.
I don't know. You don't know this guy. You're right. Roller snakes could be big in the...
You're making...
He could just be doing this as a side job. He could just be doing this as a side gig.
Yeah, this could just be his passion that he does for funsies. He could be like a multi-billionaire tech giant. You don't know.
But he loves teaching a snake to regurgitate grapefruit skins in front of crowds of people while he spins around. It's cool. I get it.
It makes total sense. So she puts him in a jail cell with his snake and assures him there's no deals to be made. I don't think anything involving vendor paperwork ever involves a plea deal. But that's just me. I don't work in the court system. So... At this moment, we see the rats and stuff exterminators. And you know what? They've been under every desk in the precinct. They've been in every cell. They've been in every office, in every interrogation room. They have hunted this rat down. They cannot find it for the life of them. And
I mean, come on. How would you be able to find a methed-out rat? That rat's probably everywhere in 2 seconds. You'd never be able to catch it.
Everywhere and nowhere.
Rats in everywhere and nowhere. Rat King is there. And don't they say, looks like we got a rat daddy. Which we don't really know what rat daddy means, but yeah. They acknowledge that this rat is like really, really superior to them.
It sounds because like when you're watching it, it sounds like we got a rat daddy. Like he's the daddy of the rats. He's a Mac daddy rat. But when you're watching it with the captions, which I do, it says we have a rat, comma, daddy.
He's that's calling his partner daddy because they are lovers, plumber lovers. That's what they do at work.
Exactly. Well, they're not plumbers. They're exterminators.
Exterminator lovers. Well, sorry. They keep showing their ass cracks so much. And you just get that plumber vibe. But yes, you're right.
I thought he was calling his partner daddy, which made it really much more interesting. So the rat exterminators, the rats and stuff guys, they are really having a doozy of a time trying to catch the meth rat, which makes complete sense. You got rats are already fast and sneaky as it is. A rat on meth, I can't even imagine.
Are you kidding?
A little trail of dust behind them.
It is, and it's just like going and like ripping off its face and climbing up the walls. Total exorcist rat. It would be very scary, especially if it started getting into that rat community. Imagine a bunch of meth out rats. Rats and stuff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got your job cut out
for
you.
They're not equipped for the job. Okay, they have a really genius idea because drug addicts love junk food and this rat is a drug addict.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
So in order to attract the drug addict rat, they are leaving out junk food as a lure. And it works for a second. And the rat comes into the cage like nearer and nearer because he really wants to get to that junk food. And then the rat exterminator explains that he had this moment with the rat where he's like holding it. And then the rat just got this crazy look in his eye and his like feet went nuts. Basically like started a little fire just from the friction of his little feet, and then he zoomed right out of the guy's hands, right out of the cage, right back into the wall, and the exterminators are like, we are flying our white flag of surrender. Like, we can't do this. This rat is better than us. He's far superior. He's gonna outlive us all. The Rat King has spoken. Bye. We're out. So she's like, you guys are gonna screw me over. You're just leaving. What am I gonna do? I need to catch this rat. It's the one thing Palermo's asked me to do this episode. It's
you guys
my one
are
job.
Rats and stuff. You need to get this rat. It's your one thing, please.
And Oh, what do you know? Roller Snakes pipes up from the jail cell inside the precinct and he holds up his little snake and he goes,
"You want to make a deal now?"
And Corey gets the sneakiest smile on her face. And you know,
she's going to use his boa constrictor to catch that damn rat. That methed out rat.
If there is one thing that can catch a methed out rat, it's a snake. Moving on. We're going to go back to the arson story. I'm going to, again, try not to get too bogged down in the details. But TC and Palermo and Chris are all starting to kind of get to the bottom of this whole shebang. And basically, they're starting to put pieces together that Matt Miller is getting paid for claiming that all these warehouse fires of the warehouses that Bilson owns are accidents. He's getting five figures every time he reports these fires as accidental in the warehouse. He has five-figure payment sent to him to his bank account in the Cayman Islands.
Oh, you guys remember Matt Miller. He's the investigator, quote-unquote, investigator of all these arson. Oh, I knew something shady was at hand, and everyone did. Everyone knew that Matt Miller, there was something going on, and now we get it. He is taking this money from the Phoenix or whatever he can get. Maybe
from Bilson. From Bilson. It's all Bilson's warehouses.
All three warehouses attributed to our ghost arsonist are owned by shell companies controlled by Curtis Bilson. Right, there's more. All three fires were declared accidents by Lieutenant Matt Miller.
Huh. And that, boys and girls, brings us right back to reality.
There's more. 10 years ago, Bilson owned three other warehouses that also burnt down. Two on the west side, one in Marina Del Rey. All three were ruled accidents by Matt Miller.
And Curtis Bilson collected millions in insurance.
Now, I'm going to get to know everything about Matt Miller. I want you two to work at the two time periods of the fires and see if we can't get a name for our friend the Phoenix.
I think maybe we should pay Mr. Bilson a visit.
I think maybe you're right.
Well, you don't think Bilson's in a cop to commit an arson for money, do you?
No, I just want to light a match under his butt and see how high he flies.
Oh, they're all Bilson's warehouses. Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. I thought this was just in this particular case, it was Bilson's. Okay. Come on, guys. It doesn't really like... What about the insurance companies? They do investigations all the time. They're not like, hey, five of your warehouses Bilson's have burned down.
You're asking too many questions.
Okay, you're right. You're right. Keep going. You're asking way too many questions.
It becomes clear to TC and Chris that there's a much bigger plot at play involving insurance fraud with all these warehouse fires. And there's just one piece they're not getting. And they're very unclear about what that piece is. Who do you think they think has the piece?
Oh, Mortimer? Oh, our good old friend Mortimer with his little baby rat coffin under his bed. He probably has the answers inside that coffin. He's just waiting for Chris to come back.
Do you think he has the answers, or do you think he thinks he's giving them the answers?
He thinks he's just saying different questions. Right, just vague, weird things. They can't figure it out. But anyway, they have to go back and see him.
Right. So this is where he gives another incredibly dramatic, just absolutely could not take up more space in this scene. He gives them this speech about, like, is the Phoenix really a ghost? Is he going to ride his chariot of fire through the moons?
You know that guy was just trying so hard. Like, that actor, this he was like, this is my debut.
Soon, he will ignite his chariot of fire and illuminate the night sky.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means that he is more dangerous and ingenious than you can even imagine. He speaks with the flames. And now, he is wanting it to reply.
Well, you're his guru. Why don't you just give him the answer?
Oh, I am a poor substitute for the fire. He has no fear. When he sets them, he stands steadfast and basks in their glow.
So he and he goes on to talk about how fire is alive and how we get reborn in the fire. Like, he's teaching a history lesson, the whole thing. He's like,
that's what all those books on his desk are for.
He's like, I know the history, I know all the etymology, I can give you what the Greeks called fire. So
he doesn't get a lot of visitors, poor guy.
I know, he's milking it so sweet hard baby. He's like, I'm gonna make this last. All right, so TC and Chris have already been sitting through about half an hour of Anton Mortimer's riddles.
miming.
And history lessons. His miming.
His childhood
story. He's showing them his collection of rat caskets.
His memoir. He's just loving it. Whatever he can do to keep them there.
He's like, oh, did I show you this? Did I show you this? Oh, my God, did I show you this?
Look, I got another little secret under my bed.
The last thing. So many secrets, you guys. I have also so many flavors of tea. Did I tell you that? I mean, I don't boil the tea. They don't let me boil the tea, but, like, I have so many flavors of tea. So the very last thing he does is he gives a lesson about the biology of your body when you are burned. So he's like, it depends through your epidermis and your connective tissue and to your nervous system. Yeah, he sounds a little bit like a Halloween character.
Also, you know, I don't know much about Infernist culture, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out that yeah, fire is going to burn you from your skin down to your bones. That's pretty much all he's doing. He's just saying fancy words for yeah, it burns you completely. And it doesn't take an Infernist to realize, like, yeah, fire is going to burn you, Mortimer. We know. Get on with it. I don't know if you know this, but first your skin burns off, then your muscles. It's like, of course, Mortimer. We get it.
The human body is flammable.
Like, what? You sound like you think you're really cool saying this really most secret information.
But their bodies don't catch fire, but they do.
What a dumbass, Mortimer. Just kidding. You're very smart, big British accent.
He's like, you want to look at my books and tell me I'm a dumbass, bud? You want to look at these books and tell me I'm a dumbass? Okay. Oh, my God.
Oh, Mortimer.
Okay, so he gives Chris, you know, this lesson, this insider's Infernist peek into mm-hmm. what fire does mm-hmm. to the human body. And then he's like, but you know all about this, don't you, Officer Kelly? And she just, like, bolts out of the room. And you think...
Guys, I don't know. Poor Officer Kelly. She's just she's getting the brunt of all these bad negative things happening. I can't take one more bad thing happening to Chris Kelly.
I know. At first, you thought Corey was going to sort of be the, like... spit like a shit upon one, you know, like with because of the shooting incident mm-hmm. and the pressure of like being a family cop, but they just quickly demoted her to paperwork and they're like, Chris Kelly,
everything happens to Chris Kelly, crazy if things happen, she's just coming, a magnet,
it's gonna land on you,
right? Poor Chris.
So they leave the room, and this is not important, but the whole time they're building up, like every meeting they have with Dr. Anton Mortimer, he's building up to this because he's like, oh, Chris, you know all about this. You know, you're Chris. Me and you were in Furnace. We both know, right, girl? And you're like, okay, so is there some sort of history for Chris? Like, you think maybe in her old days, like maybe she was a wild child and she started fires or something.
She's hot, like, on the Infernus circle. She's like, hot within those Infernus chat rooms. Everyone knows Chris Kelly.
Because Colin... Do you remember the meeting they have with Palermo in the beginning? She's like, arsonists love to talk to each other, love to brag about their burns. It's mm-hmm. all in their circles. Like, she's talking mm-hmm. as if she knows. So it's very much implying that, like, in her rebellious days, she was a teen burner.
She's a teen burner. She's a teased Infernus. We don't know that. That's just speculation, but we don't know.
No. She wasn't, because this is the big reveal, and I wanted to slap every single person who participated in this episode for the reveal, because Chris and TC go into the hallway of the mental institution and he's like, where did you, like, you ran out of there, Chris, tell me what's happening. And she's like, no, it's nothing. And he's like, Chris, that guy got under your skin. Dr. Anton Mortimer knows your secrets. Tell me everything. And she's like, okay, well.
One night when I was 7, I woke out of a dead sleep. In our house, my room was engulfed in fire. I knew I should run and get the hell out of there, but I was so paralyzed with fear. I just froze.
And he's like,
what?
Oh.
What? Chris, keep going. I'm just shocked.
No, I mean, that's it. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, that's why I wanted to slap everyone involved in this episode.
Oh my gosh, because they are building up to Chris being some kind of infernus. You're starting to ask all these questions because Mortimer's getting in her head. The psychology is spinning, and it turns out that she just did what any 7-year-old would do when the house catches on fire.
Yes.
They're be terrified and sit in their room.
I truly was like, did I miss something?
Like, what
here?
Is she supposed to do as a 7-year-old? Like, sound the alarms for everybody and run down the neighborhood, getting everyone buckets of water? Like, of course you're going to be terrified if your house is burning down.
Yes.
I'd probably freeze in place, too.
Yes. And then she's like, you know, nobody, like, the house burned down and we never figured out what started the fire. And I'm like, it's not even kind of implying that you started it and don't remember it. Like,
she like was sleepwalking as a 7-year-old and just started it. She did nothing wrong, nothing unusual in this situation, but this whole episode,
so yeah,
you're thinking that she's
absolutely absolutely zero payoff with this weird Anton Mortimer getting into Chris Kelly's
glad
head,
we built that one
whatever.
Up for you guys. Glad we were really
I know I
for
just
the
had
reveal
I had to share it because it was like such a womp womp. Okay, so here's where I'm going to try to simplify it as much as humanly possible. We've already talked about Bilson, who owns the warehouses, mm-hmm. and Matt Miller, who was the arsonist detective who kept saying that the warehouse fires were just accidents by homeless people who accidentally
accidents.
Got a barrel out of control, right?
Constant accidents from Matt Miller. Something sneaky's going on with him. We know it.
So one night, Matt Miller's going out to his car, and he's greeted by the Phoenix, and the Phoenix starts his car on fire and burns Matt Miller alive.
Oh, shit. Matt Miller got what was coming to him because it turns out Matt Miller was in this crazy threesome ring with Mr. Bilson, and they were having the Phoenix catch all of Mr. Bilson's warehouses on fire for insurance money. Then, guess what they do? Yeah. They could in the cahoots to kill Phoenix. They try to burn him in one of those things. That's why everyone thinks he's a ghost.
Because then they don't have to pay him. Because if he just burns to death in the warehouse, then they're like, oh, more money for us. So here's kind of what kills me about this. So he burns Matt Miller alive. There's absolutely no shred of empathy whatsoever. It's horrible. The next day, Palermo and TC and Chris get all the pictures of the incident report for the car burning. Ooh. And TC heartlessly throws the pictures of Matt Miller's charred body and car onto Palermo's desk and goes,
so I wonder if Matt Miller would have ruled this one accidental.
Damn, TC, you might not be an infernus, but you sure know how to burn. Damn.
Ooh, girl. Talk Ooh. About the tea.
Did Mortimer help you spill that tea, TC? You should have burned him.
They're all starting to put the pieces together, and they realize now with Matt Miller being dead, that basically Bilson's in trouble and that Bilson was involved in the fraud. The pieces are starting to come together.
I'm pretty sure Bilson is pretty freaked out because Matt Miller just got burned in his car. The Phoenix is coming for you, like, Bilson. The Phoenix is coming for you.
So after they put the connection together that probably whoever has killed Matt Miller is most likely after Bilson for revenge because they betrayed him in the fire arson fraud ring, Palermo decides, like, let's split up. I'll go get Bilson. You guys go back to Anton Mortimer so he can tell you some more riddles and be super helpful.
Dude, TC and Chris are like, please, no more Anton Mortimer, please. Palermo, can we be done with him?
He's like, go listen to riddles for another 45 minutes.
This is like the 10th time they've been there, and he's absolutely done nothing this whole time. Nothing.
So, but here's my absolute, this was the, there's so many highlights of this episode, but the absolute highlight of this episode is that Palermo goes to get Bilson, he goes to arrest him, and he's so proud, he walks in the door, he's like, Bilson, I've got you for fraud, and right at that moment, the Phoenix comes behind Palermo and pistol whips him. And knocks him out. And I'm like, of course Palermo gets pistol whipped.
He's gotten shot
by the Phoenix.
Lieutenant Palermo, Santa Monica bike patrol. You're under arrest.
You have the right to remain so.
He's not going anywhere with you. But you are coming with me.
Okay, let's think about it. He got shot in the leg. He got shot in the chest. He fell down 5 stairs of fire escapes. He's gotten pistol whipped. He's gotten handcuffed. Now he's being tied up by an arsonist. Like, Palermo,
dude. He's so bad at his job.
He's so bad at his job. Step down at lieutenant. Come on, let Del Toro could do a better job than this. Come on.
Seriously, just like have some self-esteem, bud, and just know when it's time to hang it up.
He's like that leader of the group that just cannot do anything anymore. They're just kind of like, okay, Palermo. All right, bud.
Such denial. So I died because he's so proud. He's like, Bilson, you're coming with me or whatever. And then you're immediately the Phoenix is like, whoosh, I'm taking you with me. So he just is knocked out cold.
So Palermo, Bilson, pistol whip, knocked out, tied up, and the Phoenix is taking them, we assume, to a warehouse. I'm just going to make a wild guess. And the Phoenix is going to take them to a burned down warehouse, and he ties them up, and we're like, oh shit, the Phoenix is going to rise.
He's finally going to get his revenge. Never mind, Palermo didn't do anything, but whatever. I guess he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, like when you're on the top of a building trying to yell freeze to a serial killer down below.
He like thought he was going to get Bilson, and the Phoenix was like, no, bitch, this is my guy to burn. You are not going to arrest this guy and bring him in. I know you're feeling good about yourself, but boop, knock you out, tie you up, wrong place, wrong time, going to set you on fire.
Poor Palermo just cannot catch a break. So TC and Chris go to Anton Mortimer one time, and he's like, but I've already told you. I've given you so many riddles. I've told you who we're talking about. Oh, I've told you what's going to happen. And then, bless her heart, Chris does put two and two together. No thanks to Dr. Anton Mortimer. Ashes to Ashes was somewhere in the plethora of riddles that were recited to them, and she's like, oh, it must mean that he's gonna take them back to the warehouse where he down, like they think he died and the warehouse burned to ashes, and he's gonna return to that place and burn them up.
Oh yeah, that makes total sense. Good job, Chris. Just like, yeah, okay,
that's why she's good. Like, that's the obviously the first thing that would come to your mind.
And he's the Phoenix because he rose from those ashes to begin with, because he didn't actually die.
Right.
They thought they were killing him, but he's like, no. And that's how it's all making sense now, which is rare for me.
So they've put two and two together, and they get there and he's not there. They're like, oh shit, what happened? They look down. They're like, Palermo must be with him, because Palermo's entire gun belt, all of his utilities are on the floor of Bilson's office.
The Phoenix didn't do a very good job of cleaning up anything.
No.
He's like, I'm going to take all this off. Make sure you're, well, that, yeah. Why would he do that? Anyway, yeah.
Clues. So in the process, I just little crumbs here and there. So in Bilson's office, they find the address, like the info. The short version is they find the info for the Phoenix. And they track down his apartment. And when you get there, you see his little crafting desk that we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah. He's going to make those rock coffins.
His special little, he's been making those little baby coffins. Ooh. He's been burning the edges of that newspaper so delicately.
Dyeing it with some tea, making it like all old and vintage.
There's this amazing footage of him creating like, not just any flamethrower, but like flamethrower 2.0.
Like the ultimate flamethrower in his mind. He's going to get this patented. That's what Infernus do. They're visual artists. That's what they do.
I mean, that's what they're good at. That's why they're artists. So they are like, oh, this must be him. And then it's not worth explaining the details. The only thing you need to know is once they track down the Nix, and they find his apartment, they immediately go to the warehouse where Palermo and Bilson are being held captive.
I know,
you
we're
don't
giving
need
him,
to know anything.
We're like diving
else.
Hard into the details. And then at his apartment, the Phoenix, he has this really nice credenza that is like on top of it.
Well,
yes,
we mentioned earlier that he had a craft corner.
He did. We did mention he had a craft corner.
So I was just referencing it. And this is where it happens. So they go to the warehouse, and this is also just classic Pacific Blue. Chris and TC are the only two people in the entire city of Santa Monica, Huntington Beach, that can break into a burning warehouse in bike shorts, very flammable windbreaker,
yep,
and a helmet, no breathing apparatus, no fire suit, mask or anything.
And Chris isn't traumatized at all from when her house burned down when she was 7. She's not scared at all.
Oh, correct.
She's ready to embrace it.
I didn't think about that. So they find them at the warehouse. They walk in. pretty casually, all things considered, the whole entire warehouse is burning and Palermo and Bilson are handcuffed to a pipe in the middle of the whole shebang. And they're like, hey, guys, we're going to save you.
Palermo, so- you getting yourself in the craziest dang situations.
Did you stinker. Just get shot, Palermo?
You stinker. You need to get home.
So this is also a good part. Chris, in an effort to cut Palermo down. So Chris throws the axe to TC in a burning warehouse because what else? When you have your vision obstructed, you definitely need axes being thrown in your
That seems like the most reasonable thing vicinity. To do, for sure. During a burning warehouse, you just throw axes.
Mm-hmm. So the very last thing that happens is they get Palermo down. They chop him down with the axe. They get him out of the building. And when they leave, they turn around to look back in the warehouse and they see the Phoenix. And he's in the flames. He's in his fire suit. And they're like, drop the flamethrower. And he's like, never. And he turns around. And they're like, if you don't drop it, we're going to shoot you. They shoot him. And because it's bullets and he's got a huge canister pack.
What do you think's going to happen, guys?
Flammable liquid.
What do you think's going to happen? I got an idea or two.
Blows. But, guys, in keeping with the theme of the show, you see him essentially kind of blow up, right?
But halfway. Then, you're not
all
really
of a
sure.
sudden, he just disappears. Mm-hmm. He just disappears. And mm-hmm. everybody looks at each other. Bilson, Palermo, TC, and Chris are like, was he really a fucking ghost this whole time?
The
was
fuck?
It true?
Was it Elvis? Maybe it was Elvis. Just please tell me it was Elvis all along. Elvis turns out to be the Phoenix.
Elvis
That's all
in the
I
background.
Want. Ugh, what a riveting
you know what?
Ending.
We have not seen Elvis in a while.
We haven't seen Elvis, Del Toro, a couple people. Sheila, where's Sheila at? You know? But man, that ending.
Sheila's got money to make.
He probably was
Girls
a ghost.
To sell and money to make.
But I think, was he a ghost? What do you think? I don't know.
You know what? I saw Suicide's eyes in the beginning and I believe him. That was real fear. So yeah, I think he was a ghost.
Maybe he was a ghost. Yeah.
I think he was a figment of their imagination and he came back to get revenge on Bilson and Matt Miller.
Mm, riveting.
That's my personal opinion.
Pacific
this is my
blue.
Belief.
You peeling can't... away the onions. They did it. They did it.
Or the layers of the onions.
Layers
not
of the
just
onions.
Peeling away onions.
Just peeling one big onion.
I just imagine one person under a pile of onions and just someone just like throwing onions off like they're under there. Escape them.
That was an intense.
That's
that
how
was
I saw that playing
man,
out.
Man, that episode was all over the place. All right, guys. So obviously the Phoenix is a ghost. You make up your own opinions. We don't really know at this point, but I'm done with all that fiddle faddle and fire talk. Okay. And I want to know what happened to Roller Snakes, that methed out rat, and Corey.
Let's get to
okay?
the good stuff.
Let's get to the good stuff.
I was just going to say the fact that we had an episode where there was a meth rat and mm-hmm. we didn't spend the entire episode.
I know. I think we should have told the meth rat story. So Palermo comes home or back to the precinct after, you know, being tied up and almost killed in a fire. And he's just coming to work the next day because he still just needs to get shit done. And Corey's like,
well, it's kind of one of those good news, bad news kind of things again. The good news is the rat's been caught by a snake, as a matter of fact.
A snake?
Right.
What's the bad news?
Ah! Now we can't find the snake.
So they've got a methed out boa constrictor just loose in the precinct. And then it's like, oh, Corey. And that could be really dangerous, you guys. I'm going to say.
Can you imagine?
That could be really dangerous.
The meth rat was bad enough.
Now you've got a methed out
boa constrictor.
Someone's got to talk to HR. You just have it lying around the office. Everyone's
Dying
so scared.
Faster and harder than he can.
Just killing people. Oh, I hope he comes back next episode and he's just murdering people. Falling from the ceiling and just choking them to death and they have to investigate.
That'd be amazing. Oh, God.
Well, you know what? It's probably a better life than being forced to chug down freaking grapefruits and strip them for people while you're being spun
around.
Are
you kidding? He's high and he gets to eat rats?
Yeah. And
That's
he's got
like
a
the dream.
He's got a big precinct to run around, dude. He's living his life.
Surfing
he's
up
so
grapefruit
good.
Anymore.
What a weird episode. Man, that was a lot to get through. Mortimer, he just was my favorite character. You guys, we have to put clips of him on Instagram. Pure Anthony Hopkins wannabe, and I love it. We're going to have to put some of his beautiful, I would call it poetry, up so you guys can see a little bit of it.
It really is. Maybe I will take the time to transcribe some of it and then like create it as a poem just so you can really appreciate the dialogue.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
Yeah, thanks for adjusting your radio knobs.
Bye. Well, so I learned something. I don't know if this is true, if any hypnotists are out there, but when you get hypnotized, you don't go against anything that your morality or ethical, like, structure lets you do.
We're not asking him so if to someone engage was like, in anything sexual. We're just asking him for an interview. I don't think he's morally...
sexual?
You said
it's your moral or ethical... What if he doesn't want to come on? He's not going to come on.
I'm just saying...
Get your mind out of the snake gutter, the snake rollerblade gutter.
I'm down there with my python. I want to be down there with someone.
Well, I just meant like you're not going to go against thing that you innately don't want to do. So he probably would not want to do this. So he's
okay,
not going to say yes.
He'll be like, and what moral the hell? Really triggered me because I'm like, he could just say no. It doesn't mean he's ethically and morally opposed to our podcast. That's such strong language.
Anyway, that would be my, what do you call it? My neck, my, no, my, my crime. Jesus. I could not get that out. That would be my crime of choice.
All of that brain power. And it was like your wheels were turning.
Just to have a crime.
My crime. Any hoozle, we put everything up. We spend the night that first night. The next morning, and I'm not a morning person either, so this has nothing to do with morning people. But we're sitting around the campfire, drinking our morning coffee. Colin walks by me with just the worst, most sour look on his face. Doesn't say anything to me directly, but as he walks by, he goes, I fucking hate camping.
You guys, I was determined to catch a fish. I love fishing. I don't know what it is, but I was so determined to like hunt and gather for us and have dinner prepared. And I just had this idea of these like giant fish, like dinner. Everyone's happy and clapping for me.
It was
but
so cute.
Nothing, not even a bite, not even a one bite. And I was fishing so hard. And remember that guy that came up next to me and he's like, do you know how to use that? And I was like, I don't think it's a lake fishing pole. I think it's only deep sea. And he's like, no, let me show you. And it was totally
just in general,
usable.
Have you ever held a fishing pole?
He did it.
Before?
He like clicked a couple buttons and then it was like, oh, but I was so like, no, it's the deep sea. You can't use it on lakes. That's why I'm having a hard time. No, it's fine. It's fine. And he was like, no, it's not.
And then when
not.
He fixed it, you were like, now I have no excuse.
I
as
know.
To why I'm not catching
and then I was
fish.
Just so mad. I'm excited to see what happens with the meth rat. That's like on the tip of my toes. I know those two guys are going to find it.
That's on the tip of your toes, huh?
Oh, it's got me on the tip of my toes.
On the edge of your seat.
Every time I do a saying,
or
I mess
the tip
it up
of
so
your
bad.
Tongue.
Remember
when
I said
called?
She's painting a bad picture in my mouth or something?